Hey, everybody, welcome into another edition of Locked On Eagles. Louis DiBiase here joining you on this Tuesday edition of the show, April 7th. We are, less than 3 weeks away from the 2020 NFL Draft. Cannot wait. The Eagles right now will get set to go on the clock at pick 21. That could change. They could move up the board. They could move down the board, depending on, you know, who is available at wide receiver, perhaps on the interior of the offensive line, at cornerback, linebacker, safety, you name it. The Eagles right now, their options are open, and we're just so excited to continue to speculate and evaluate all of these prospects that Philadelphia can choose from with their 8 draft picks in 2020. Make sure to subscribe to the podcast on any platform or head over to LockedOnEagles.com. We had a really fun edition of Mock Draft Monday yesterday, episode 7, where me and Gino, we moved up the board this time, and I'm not going to say for who or for what. I'm sure because of all the talk that we've had on this podcast about this scenario, and I'm sure you've seen it on Eagles Twitter as well, I'm sure you can guess what position we moved up for in the draft. But we wanted to drop a hypothetical of, let's say, Howie Roseman decides he's going to make a second big trade this year involving a lot of draft picks, as they traded for cornerback Darius Slay for a 3rd and 5th. Let's say they want to do it again for a player that falls down the board. They want to move into the top 15 and get a star offensive or defensive player for the future. What would it be like? What would our board look like if we maybe, let's say, don't have another second round pick or a third, or let's say we gave up a couple of those 4th round picks, as Philadelphia does have 3 in this draft. Would the board still look pretty good? Would it be worth it? Would it be worth it for that one player? Me and Gino dove into that yesterday. So make sure you subscribe to the show and get into that episode. As for today, what I'm going to get into right here on Locked On Eagles, I'm a big upside guy. You all know that. If Howie Roseman is really committed to changing the philosophy when it comes to talent versus college production, because with Joe Douglas, the Eagles were really into college production. It's why you saw guys like Derek Barnett go to Philadelphia in 2017. It's why guys like J.J. Arcega-Whiteside last year was the choice in the 2nd round over somebody that has more upside, more physical talent like a DK Metcalf. Howie Roseman talked about at the end of the year press conference that maybe that's something they should look into changing philosophically, or at least being more flexible to the idea of, yeah, this guy didn't produce as much in college, but you get him into the NFL with great coaching, he has physical talents that you just simply cannot coach and that we can't get out of a guy like J.J. Arcega-Whiteside. So if they're really committed to that, and that's my mindset, that's what I always like. I'm an upside guy to a fault. It is a more risky approach, but I'm more of a ceiling guy than a floor guy. If they, too, want to give that a shot and take some more risks here in 2020 with more draft picks, who could the options be in round 1, round 2, round 3, even rounds 4, 5, and 6? I have a prospect for rounds 1 through 6 the Eagles could consider in the upside department. Round 7 right now, Philadelphia does not have a pick, so I went with 6 prospects that we will get into in segments 2 and in segment 3. So before we get into that, though, wide receiver Alshon Jeffrey, we have an update on that situation with the Eagles, or maybe not an update, but we received some more information about his state with the team, and it doesn't sound like Philadelphia has him in the plans long term, as expected, and it sounds like they didn't have him in the plans long term pretty quickly after guaranteeing his contract in 2020. According to the Philadelphia Inquirer, the Eagles tried to trade Alshon Jeffrey in October. Again, just a month after guaranteeing his contract in 2020. To me, that's proof of 2 things. Number 1, Alshon, again, as I said on the podcast a couple weeks ago, I did a podcast solely on Alshon Jeffrey and what his future is in Philadelphia. If we do think he was the source, if there's a way he can salvage his career with the Eagles, if it's even worth salvaging, if you are the organization, I said long-term, I know Howie Roseman said some positive things about him in his one-on-one with Dave Spadaro a couple weeks ago, but I thought it was clear he had to say a lot of that stuff if Alshon was going to be on the roster right now while he recovers from injury, while Howie Roseman sees if, okay, when this guy gets healthy, can I get some sort of compensation for him? That was my thing, is he had to say a lot of those positive things in case he has to wait while Alshon Jeffrey stays on this roster. But it did not mean that Alshon Jeffrey was going to be part of the long-term plans. And to me, I think this shows that he, for a long time, has not been a big part of the plan. So if they were willing to move him in October when he was healthier and actually a focal point of the offense, to me there's no way when he comes back from this Liz Frank injury that he's going to suddenly walk in and be wide receiver one or wide receiver two again. Yeah, maybe he's on the roster for a while until he gets healthy, but I think that's only going to be because Roseman's going to kick the tires on seeing, can I get some sort of draft pick, some sort of even conditional compensation for this guy when he's healthy, because right now you have no leverage and no team is going to want to take on that contract, that cap hit for a player that is aging and is significantly regressing and is being accused of being a player that talks bad about his teammates and his organization behind their back anonymously through the media. And that's the other thing that I think the story that they tried to trade Alshon in October is proof of. I think this is proof, once again, more proof, because you guys know I've changed my mind on this, and I'm pretty aggressive in believing Alshon Jeffrey was the source that talked to Josina Anderson for the last 2 years. I think this is more proof that Alshon was that source, because to me, according to this story, Alshon Jeffrey learned pretty quickly in October that he was being shopped and he was not happy. You know, for obvious reasons, the month before, Roseman made it seem like you're part of the plans at least for another 2 years because we're going to guarantee your salary in 2020 the year later. And then a month later, you find out you are being shopped. Right around that same time, why I think it's proof he was the source, because right around that same time in October, the anonymous source bashed Howie Roseman for not getting the job done in trading for Jalen Ramsey, and that source bashed Carson Wentz and the offense. So isn't it funny that right around the same time Alshon Jeffrey learned that the Philadelphia Eagles were trying to trade him despite making it seem like they were committed to him, suddenly this source, who talked to Josina Anderson of all people again for 2 years straight, isn't it funny that they make those comments right around the same time Alshon Jeffrey learned he was being shopped by Howie Roseman? Isn't it funny that that source talked about Howie Roseman and bashed his quarterback, Carson Wentz? That, to me, is just even more proof that this was Jeffrey that was talking behind his team's back. And I think even the opposite of that points to him as the source. Maybe they tried trading him first, or, you know, second. Maybe Alshon Jeffrey made those comments, and then you saw the Eagles taking phone calls on him, trying to ship him out of town, right? Because that would make sense too. Alshon Jeffrey makes the comments, Howie Roseman, because, you know, you would try to think, obviously he was injured at that time, he was not playing nearly as well as he had in 2017 and 2018, so I guess that would justify Roseman taking phone calls. But it is a little head-scratching that a month after guaranteeing his salary, you are already taking phone calls on him, unless maybe you knew that Jeffrey was the one that made those comments, and then you try to trade him. But either way, either scenario, scenario A or scenario B that I just laid out, it is just more, you know, outstanding evidence that Alshon Jeffrey is the anonymous player source that has bashed the offense and the organization for two straight years now. And I just think there's no way. I know they have to eat 7% of their salary cap this year if they cut him. I know that. I know they're going to eat over the next 2 years a total of $26.7 million to have him not on your team. And I get wanting to hold off and see if I can get something for him when he's healthy, or making him play on the field and try to get some sort of production out of him so you don't have to swallow that dead cap. But for me, this is just, again, more outstanding evidence that this was Alshon, that Alshon is Alshonimus, and I'm getting rid of him no matter what if that's the case. To me, this is worse than in 2005, the spat between Donovan McNabb and Terrell Owens. Because at least Terrell Owens and McNabb, I know they went through the media eventually and it got really messy at the end, but at least, you know, they would go back and forth on the sidelines in the locker room. At least it was a face-to-face thing for a while. With Alshon, that's just not the case. He doesn't have the stones to talk to his quarterback or to talk to his coaches and the organization face-to-face, inside the locker room, in closed doors. No, he, if it was him, and it seems like it was him, he has gone behind his team's back anonymously, won't even put his name to it. That's the thing. Terrell Owens and McNabb, they went through the media, but it was in front of a camera. Alshon, if this was him, He's doing it in the most sneaky way ever. To me, this is worse than the Terrell Owens situation. And at least Terrell Owens was a Hall of Fame wide receiver in the middle of his prime. Alshon not only could be this snitch, this snake, but he's regressing on the field, he's aging, and he's injured all the time. So I just don't see a scenario where, you know, I know Howie Roseman talked about Alshon, you know, the focus right now is getting him healthy. He wants to still win championships in Philadelphia. And, you know, he's been a good player for them the last 3 years. And he's shown what he could do, you know, for this team on the football field. And I get the whole salary cap thing. You guys know that. I went through an entire episode saying I understand Roseman's approach. But I don't think there's any way, despite Roseman's comments earlier this month, or in March, excuse me, I don't think there's any way he plays on the football field for the Philadelphia Eagles in 2020. And I think this is just more proof, because if it was up to Roseman, he was trying to get rid of him last October. So, and again, that just shows to me more proof that he really was the source, because the timing, if you're denying it at this point, if you're denying all this evidence, then you're lying to yourself. You truly don't want to believe that Alshon was the guy making these comments, because Alshon Jeffrey finds out the same month that he's being shopped, and suddenly, especially with the connection to Josina Anderson, the rift with him and Carson Wentz on the field, not showing up in Houston in the summer to throw with Wentz and the team, all of that together, then this trade, potential trade talk comes in October, and then the comments happen again. Like, if you don't think that's Alshon, then I don't know what to tell you. And even if it was the opposite, like I said, even if the comments came first and then this trade talk happened, that is more evidence that points to the team believing it was Alshon Jeffrey. And we already know that teammates thought it was Alshon Jeffrey, because there was a confrontation in the locker room with a prominent offensive player where that player and Alshon had to be separated. So this is just, it's a messy situation that I know they're locked in right now money-wise, but eventually they got to get out from underneath this, hopefully through a draft pick. If not, when he's healthy and you can't get anything for him, I'm cutting my ties with Alshon Jeffrey. All right, let's get into some upside options coming up in this 2020 NFL draft. In segment two, I'll go through rounds 1 through 3, and then in segment three, I'll go through rounds 4 through 6. Louis DiBiase here joining you on Locked On Eagles. Don't go anywhere. We'll be right back. All right, Eagles fans, thanks for joining me on another edition of Locked On Eagles. This is a Tuesday edition of the show, April 7th. Hope you guys are all staying safe out there, listening to my podcast in quarantine, social distancing. Stay safe out there. We love you. And, you know, more time to dig deep into this draft class, the 2020 NFL draft, this prospect pool that's pretty deep at a lot of positions. And it's a big draft for the Eagles, who are trying to have this, you know, infusion of youth. They need a lot of work on both sides of the football long term, for sure. And they have the draft ammo to do it. Rounds 1, 2, they have a pick. Rounds 3, they still have a pick. Round 4, they have 3 draft picks. So in the first 4 rounds alone, you have 6 picks. And then 2 more later on. So you have 8 draft picks this year to work with. And there's a lot that they can do here with those picks and that ammunition. And for me, as you guys know, my philosophy is I'm somebody that likes to take risks. I'm somebody that likes to go for the players with high ceilings, even if they tend to have lower floors, because I can coach, I feel like, a lot of the flaws that those players have on the field. I love going for that kind of player. It's why I was so upset that they went with J.J. Arcega-Whiteside last year over a DK Metcalf, because college production doesn't always mean that that's what they're going to be in the NFL. It's why DK Metcalf was astronomically better than J.J. Arcega-Whiteside last year. It's why this year I am so more in favor of other wide receiver options in rounds 1 and 2 than somebody like LSU wide receiver Justin Jefferson. I know there's a floor there, and I know there's a security there, but to me, I don't want to call it cowardice, because sometimes it's smart to take that player. You need those kind of players that you can depend on. You need that security in a draft pick, for sure. I'm not saying just take raw guys in every single round, but for me, I'm prioritizing right now going for a player that eventually can be a star. You know, I guess it depends on what the Eagles need, right? So at corner, if you really just need a starting slot guy or a CB2 next to Darius Slay, I would understand wanting to go with the safer pick. But for, you know, wide receiver, for instance, that's a position they need a star wide receiver one for a long time, with DeSean Jackson being your only security right now on this offense in 2020, and he's 34 years old. So in that area, that's where I lean more so on going for an upside guy. Or like on the edge rusher right now, they're okay in their starting lineup with Brandon Graham and Derek Barnett. So I'm not going to take another guy that's just a high motor and, you know, good effort, and he's strong against the run, but maybe doesn't have the great upside athletically on the edge, explosiveness, strength as a pass rusher. Right now they have that flexibility of taking a guy more raw, like they did Josh Sweat a couple years ago, let him learn behind those other starting defensive ends, and then eventually he has the talent, he has the tools to reach a very high ceiling. And that's what I'm going to get into today. If Howie Roseman is committed to changing that philosophy, or at least, you know, adjusting it a little bit when it comes to talent versus college production, there are a lot of options to pick from in each round with these really high ceilings, but however, they might have riskier floors. We'll start here in round one, and we'll start with the theme of the last 2 weeks right here on Locked On Eagles, and it's wide receiver. An upside guy they can go with here in round one at wide receiver, Colorado's Laviska Shenault. If you ask me, after Henry Ruggs, after CeeDee Lamb and Jerry Jeudy, I think Shenault might have the most potential at wide receiver. He's 6'2", aggressive, down the field and run after the catch. Crazy good speed, and by the way, that run after the catch ability is maybe his, I don't want to say his strongest trait, but it is there, and Philadelphia needs that desperately on this offense. He broke more tackles the last 2 years than anyone in this draft, with 44 forced missed tackles. So this is a guy that's extremely versatile, lining up all over the formation at Colorado. They asked him to do everything on the outside, in the slot. He took a lot of direct snaps. He runs almost like a running back. It's a fun watch. Laviska Shenault's tape is, you know, really, really interesting. And he showed traits and flashes that make him a potential star in the making. Again, traits that you really cannot coach. Last year, yards per route run versus man coverage, leaders of that wide receiver class, and I'm sorry, over the last 2 years, Laviska Shenault number one at 4.98 yards per route versus man coverage. So this is a guy that showed, you know, man on man, on the outside, he can get the job done. I think he needs a little bit more polish there as a route runner specifically. Had a lot of injury issues as well in college, and I know that scares Eagles fans, and it should. So there is work to be done, but I think a lot of that had to do with, again, Colorado asking him to do so many things that he couldn't really focus on just being a really damn good outside wide receiver or a slot guy. He was so versatile, and that's good. You want that in Philadelphia in Doug Peterson's offense, but I don't think he's a guy that is all athleticism and raw talent. I think there's real traits he showed technique-wise that can be molded the right way as long as they commit him to a certain spot. I think the big plan for Laviska Shenault is when you bring him in, let him develop on the outside, and then when he's polished there, then let him do what he does. I think Colorado was right to move him around the formation. I think it was right for their team right away. But for the Eagles, I think you should start with having him focus on the outside, and then when he's really ready there to take that leap, then he'll be comfortable enough to go inside and maybe play some running back for you and be that versatile piece that you would draft him in the first round to be. In round two, I'm going to go with another upside player here, Alabama cornerback Trayvon Diggs. This is my kind of corner. Big, athletic, fast man coverage corner that has the upside, to me, of somebody like Darius Slay, who Philadelphia just traded for. And that's what I want in my corner. Just a guy that's going to go up to the line and shadow somebody one-on-one. He's not zone-dependent. He's just going to go up against your best receiver and stick on him like glue, and going up pressed at the line or playing off coverage, he's not going to be susceptible to, you know, double moves and to speed and, you know, more powerful wide receivers. No matter where he's lined up, he's going to be able to stick with that wide receiver. And I feel like that's what Trayvon Diggs can be. 2020 corners in this draft with at least 50 targets in single coverage. Over the last 2 years, Diggs ranks second in Pro Football Focus's coverage grading system, allowing just 20 catches, 32.3% completion percentage, only 273 yards allowed, and 4 touchdowns. I think Diggs needs work in zone coverage and discipline, but there is a lot to work with Trayvon Diggs, and he might be a first-round pick, but I don't know. I think with C.J. Henderson, Jeffrey Okuda, Christian Fulton, Jeff Gladney all being favorites to be first-round picks as well, that's 4 corners right there in round one. And also guys like Damon Arnett available, A.J. Terrell from Clemson. I think there is a good chance, that Trayvon Diggs does end up available in round two, possibly at pick 53. And if the Eagles want a guy to develop behind Darius Slay, behind Avante Maddox in year one and Sidney Jones, and then maybe take over in year two or three, probably year two, because I think Diggs is going to be ready quicker than most people. However, there is work to be done, and I think that's a perfect pick for the Eagles in round two, because again, they probably don't want to start a rookie opposite Slay in 2020. They sound like they really like Avante Maddox there or Sidney Jones. Let Diggs develop behind those three players and then eventually take over if he can meet that upside, because there is a ton of it, and he's the kind of corner, much like Darius Slay, that I think Philadelphia just has desperately needed for really the past decade. All right, another upside pick the Eagles could go with here. We'll go to round three before we take a break right here on Locked On Eagles. It's a favorite of mine. It's Tennessee defensive end Daryl Taylor. You want an athletic, explosive, bendy pass rush specialist on the edge to complement this interior defensive line? Daryl Taylor, he might be your guy, and that's what Philadelphia, to me, that's what I want for them, because Brandon Graham, one of the best defensive ends in football, but Derek Barnett, the upside, don't get me wrong, he broke Reggie White's records at Tennessee, a really good, bendy pass rusher, but he doesn't have that star power. I don't think he has that potential to be a star. And I think Daryl Taylor does, specifically, in the pass rush game. If he can stay healthy, of course, because injuries, kind of like Laviska Shenault here on this list, Daryl Taylor has dealt with some injuries. Specifically right now, he's been dealing with injuries that kept him out a lot of the draft process, the events, the Senior Bowl, and also the NFL Combine. But man, you watch it, you put on his tape, this is a player you're going to draft because of his tape. He was such a dominant first attacker. I mean, powerful, fast. His first step is just absolutely incredible, how he gets off the line of scrimmage and instantly attacks the offensive tackle. The bend is just so impressive. The last 2 years, he's had 16 and a half sacks. He had a 5-sack streak in 4 games, in a 4-game span last year. Daryl Taylor, let him rotate in with Josh Sweat as your defensive end 3 and defensive end 4, and then he's got the upside eventually to either take over for Barnett or Graham and be an absolute star. And I don't know, maybe he's a round 2 pick because of that upside, but I think round 3, it is possible if Philadelphia still has that pick that he could be available for the taking. He's one of my favorite pass rushers and just prospects alone in this draft. All right, we got to take a break right here on Locked On Eagles as we continue to get into the upside guys, the guys with the crazy high ceilings. If Howie Roseman is going to target some of those players and take some chances in this draft with more draft ammunition, with 8 picks compared to, 5 last year, who could he go after? I went with Laviska Shenault, Trayvon Diggs, and Daryl Taylor in rounds 1, 2, and 3. Heading into segment 3, we'll go into rounds 4 through 6 and try to find some more upside right here on Locked On Eagles. All right, Eagles fans, welcome back in. Thank you so much for tuning into this Tuesday edition of the podcast. Let's continue to list off some upside prospects. If Philadelphia is going to go for broke, they're going to go star hunting here in all 6 rounds that they have draft picks right now. Who could those players be that have that crazy high ceiling, crazy good potential, athletically gifted, fast, explosive, talented? Obviously, I say fast and explosive a lot because I think that's what Philadelphia needs on both sides of the ball. But, raw strength and just flashes of stardom, if Philadelphia wants to take that route, because they really haven't in the past couple years. And I understand it. It makes sense. They haven't had that many draft picks since the Carson Wentz trade. With only 5 picks, you want, surefire production. But the problem is, sometimes college production lies to you and thinks you're getting a safe player when you're really not, i.e. Danelle Pumphrey, i.e. J.J. Arcega-Whiteside. So sometimes that you're trying to go safe, and you end up going riskier because the college production sometimes lies to you about what that player actually is, and then you miss out on a DK Metcalf who is now a star for the Seattle Seahawks. So, you know, that's why I think it's good for Roseman to seriously consider taking guys with higher ceilings that, yeah, maybe they're more risky, but trust your coaching staff to develop them, and then they have abilities that you simply cannot coach and that you're just not going to get out of these high-floor players. So let's head into rounds 4 through 6 now to find some more of that upside, and I'll head to round 4 here to start. And it's Colorado linebacker Davion Taylor. If Philadelphia waits, as they traditionally do, to take a linebacker, and they really just traditionally don't invest a lot of resources in the position, and they really haven't right now this year, if they want to add another upside guy along with Jatavis Brown, Nate Geary, and TJ Edwards, I really like Colorado's Davion Taylor. His play recognition, positioning, and block shedding needs a lot of work, but this is a kid that's lengthy, explosive, and I think he could come along eventually. Maybe it takes a few years. I think a path kind of like Kamu Grugier-Hill is possible, where he starts off as a special teams specialist, but then in maybe year 2, year 3, he becomes a guy that can really have a good role in your defense. Coverage-wise, he's got fluid hips, athletic in coverage, man coverage, but again, in zone coverage, he needs that football IQ significantly increased. So Davion Taylor, a linebacker out of Colorado, an upside option in round 4. How about round 5? I'm going to go with a guy that you guys have heard me talk about before, and it's Missouri offensive guard Yazir Durant. I love the, it's kind of like the Jordan Mailata logic, where you take this guy, Durant, who's 6'7", 330 pounds, this blank canvas, and you let Jeff Stoutland try to mold that into a star. Durant, 6'7", again, like I said, 330 pounds, but don't let that fool you. This isn't a statue that's inside. This is a guy that has really good movement, and Trevor Sikkema of Locked On NFL Draft said on the Draft Network when he was evaluating Yazir Durant, quote, despite his size, Durant is a player who Missouri uses to pull around behind the line of scrimmage on split zone and counter plays as a lead blocker. Does that not sound a lot like Brandon Brooks, like Jason Kelce, Lane Johnson, Jason Peters? Durant has that athletic ability, and he's 6'7 and 330 pounds. So you know that power is there inside when your running back is going through the A gap and the B gap. So I think Durant, if the Eagles are going to wait to add more depth on that offensive line to add more competition to Matt Pryor and Jordan Mailata, I think Yazir Durant in round 5 out of Missouri is a really good option. All right, let's wrap up this edition of Locked On Eagles in round 6 with another guy that has a high ceiling at the wide receiver position, and it's Tulane wide receiver Darnell Mooney. You guys probably heard me talk about him on the Late Round Wide Receiver Options podcast last week. He's a favorite of mine. I really like his tape. He has the case of the drops, isn't the tallest guy, but again, this deep in the draft, you're going for one or two elite traits, and you're going to try to mold the rest. And Mooney has some elite traits. Number one, he's got the 4.3 speed that Philadelphia is really hunting down right now, and he's got impressive fluidity. You know, he's not just somebody that, I think Quez Watkins, another receiver this late that has 4.3 speed, doesn't always play that fast, and a lot of it has to do with processing, route running. When you're not as confident, you're not as polished that way, sometimes you struggle to use that elite speed. And Mooney actually, I think, uses it really well, instantly off the line of scrimmage, off the snap, in and out of his breaks, really fluid, really explosive. He mastered the back shoulder throw last year at Tulane. Again, not a huge guy, not 6 feet tall, but he's got bunnies. He can go up and get it. And he's also a run after the catch nightmare. So if Philadelphia waits to double dip at wide receiver, I really like the idea of Tulane's Darnell Mooney in round 6. All right, that's going to do it for today's edition of Locked On Eagles. Thank you so much for tuning in. This was the Brave Man's podcast. This was the Risk Takers podcast. This was the Coward's Anti podcast, where these are the players that you're going for broke. You could flop big time. Laviska Shenault could be the new Cordarrelle Patterson, but I think that these are guys, if you want to take risks, these are players that, yeah, they could flop big time, but they have star power that you coach it up, they have traits you can't coach, and you hope the rest you can mold into a potential star for a very long time on your offense or defense. So that's going to do it for today's edition of Locked On Eagles. Once again, thanks everyone for tuning in. Make sure to subscribe to the podcast on any platform or on LockedOnEagles.com, and make sure to follow us on Twitter at DiBiaseLOE and at Gino_LOE. I'm Lou DiBiase signing off as always. Thank you for downloading. Thank you for listening, and let's go Birds.